La gracia del Señor Jesucristo sea con ustedes. So I read and reread the text from Matthew, and I read around it, the beginning and the end, and I thought about my own halting and spotty efforts as a peacemaker. Last week I attended a prayer vigil in the rotunda of the Capitol. It was organized against a bill that was being debated in the House at that moment, SB 4, the so-called Anti-Sanctuary Cities Bill. It's legislation that I and many folks believe would create a cascade of harm and injury to our communities, particularly our communities of color. Well, the vigil ended. It was a beautiful vigil. It was a hard vigil. It was hard to watch the families who were there and listen to their stories. And everyone was invited to head upstairs and go sit in the gallery and just be a presence in the House gallery. And so I followed, and then I stood at the bottom of the stairs, and I just pondered for a minute whether I wanted to go up there and do that, because, you know, I'm a busy senior pastor, and I just have so many important things to do. So then I heard shouting and chanting up there, right? I mean, they were chanting the chants that I hear when I'm out on the marches with Workers' Defense Project. And when I heard that, I thought, okay, I'm in. So I took the stairs two by two, and I joined in the chants. And you know how the chants go. What do we do when we're under attack? Stand up, fight back. And so there I am with a group of about 50 people. I'm in my collar, so they knew who I am. And we're right outside the entrance, so there's the gallery where the organ is, and the area I'm standing in is no bigger than this stage. And the people who are gathered there are folks, mostly immigrants from the from Austin community. There were some who identified themselves as undocumented persons, who identified themselves that way in the state capitol. There were children who were there with their families. And they had spoken at the vigil. And they said, when I go to school and my parents go to work, I don't know when I come home if there's going to be anybody there. About a dozen House Democrats came upstairs and joined us. I didn't recognize all of them, but I recognized Donna Howard and Gina Hinojosa, who have, I think, have both spoken here. I honestly think I would take a bullet for those women, either one of them. I would. Amen? I mean, they're phenomenal. Gina was overcome in the moment. They stood there and they listened and they clapped with us and joined in, and she just began to weep. The door to the gallery, of course, kept opening as people were coming in, and people were very quick to try to shut the door because the chants were echoing out onto the House floor. The people who were on the floor could hear what we were saying. As I stood there yelling my fool head off, it felt really good to be there with that community. Of course, then I wondered, okay, Alfred, how does this fit in with being a person of peace? How does this fit with being a person who's committed to nonviolence? Are you practicing those things right now as you're standing here yelling at those people? And then another thought occurred to me. Sometimes the ways of peace are loud and messy. In Luke's gospel, Jesus scolds the crowd. I imagine him raising his voice a little bit and saying, "If you only knew the things that make for peace." What are the things that make for peace? The heart of Jesus' teachings about peace and nonviolence are in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5 through 7, part of which we read this morning. I don't know if there are any other teachings of Jesus that are more misunderstood, more studiously avoided, more roundly ridiculed than this set of teachings. Turn the other cheek. I wonder if Jesus ever wished that he could have like takebacks on that one, like, oh gosh, I don't know if I should have said that. I mean, what was he thinking? if you're in an abusive relationship, is Jesus recommending that you stay in, that you just take it? You know that there are pastors who have used that verse in that very way, in hurtful ways. So for the record, let's be clear this morning that based on everything else that Jesus said in the New Testament, he's not inviting victims to further battering, right? What turn the other cheek means is that when we're standing up to the powers that be, when we're in some kind of resistance mode, Jesus wants us to engage in a creative act of defiance. Jesus is saying, stand up for yourself. Assert your humanity. Refuse to be humiliated because you are a child of God. Find a way forward that's not submission, that's not going the other way away from it, that's not just doing nothing, but that's also not violent. Find that middle way, that third way. Look at the next word from Jesus. That one's a little bit easier for me to understand. He says, if anyone wants to sue you and take your coat, give your cloak as well. Now, the meaning gets lost a little bit in translation here. I guess they're thinking that the Bible is mostly read by people, polite company. And so what they're really talking about here is not a coat and a cloak. They're talking about your outer garment and your underwear, right? And you're not supposed to write underwear in the Bible. So it's not there, but that's what they're talking about. Jesus is also speaking to the poor, so let's understand the context. There is a shared hatred for this system that is stripping them of their lands and that's taking their goods and that's taking jobs away from them, and it's even taking the very clothing off their backs. So why would Jesus counsel them not only to give up their outer garment, but also to give up their underwear and basically walk out of the court stark naked? Why would he do that? Well, nakedness was taboo in Judaism. But the shame was different than in our culture. The shame in that culture was on the person who was viewing or who was causing the nakedness. Are you with me? And so Jesus is recommending a way that flips the tables on the powerful and lets them see exactly what their practices have done. Here's what's happened. You have left me absolutely naked. I have nothing. And maybe to get them to think about changing. I remember reading about a time during apartheid in South Africa, and the authorities showed up to destroy a small shanty town. And most of the people had left for work that day. There were a few women who were left in the village. And so the young soldiers went around and told the women, they said, gather up your things because the bulldozers are coming in and they're going to bulldoze down the entire town. Well, the women who knew some of these young men and knew that they were farm boys and perhaps sensed their prudery stood in front of the bulldozers and took off their clothing. The army left. There was no bulldozing that day. So I know you're having maybe some thoughts that, okay, so Pastor John's saying that we just need to run around naked more, right? No, okay. So what Rabbi Jesus is doing in these troubling sayings is, I don't think he's offering a new law, like here's a law and you need to follow it. So somebody strikes your cheek, yeah, just turn the cheek like that. No, it's not just, imitation. He's calling us to find ways to creatively engage the unjust systems and the authorities in ways that assert our dignity and our humanity, that at the same time that expose the injustice and that allow the oppressor in some way to see those who are oppressed in a new light. So we have town hall meetings with cardboard figures of our missing representatives, right? Yeah, I think that's a little bit of that third way thinking going on there. We parade with Workers' Defense Project. I've been in their marches where they parade coffins up Congress and then lay them at the Capitol to lay bare the hidden violence of the construction industry against workers. It may even be as weird as one night last fall in Austin when a protest against the president-elect was beginning to turn a little rowdy, maybe even a little bit violent. And a young woman, I think she was a UT student, Amina Amdin, a Muslim woman, an Iraqi immigrant who was wearing a hijab, squeezed herself in between protesters and this one poor soul who was like the lone Trump supporter in the crowd. You may have seen the picture in the paper. He had a big sign, and he was a big guy, right? And there were people who were like going to light his sign on fire and do all this stuff. She put herself in between the protesters and this guy. She said later, the most radical thing we can do is embrace the people who are perceived to be our enemies. And he said of her that she was a hero to him that night. Get a sense that maybe he was rethinking some things. A few years ago, I interviewed someone for an office position at the church, and we always ask people, you know, well, why do you want to work in a Methodist church? And she said because she thought it would be so peaceful and everyone was so nice. Oh, you're already laughing, you know. I haven't even given you the punchline yet. And I wanted to say to her, have you ever spent any time around Methodists? I mean, my goodness. The Methodists around this place, I mean, you all will raise all holy hell trying to get Jesus' work done, right? Because sometimes going down the road to peace is not so peaceful. The work of peacemaking, it can be messy, it can be painful, it can be really challenging. It's not always that calm of a running brook. I mean, maybe that's the goal at some point, but before it gets there, it's often loud and boisterous, like the surf of the ocean. And I wonder if this is why Jesus said, I give you peace, but not as the world gives. I'm not giving you a cabin out in the woods with a running brook, right? But like Jesus himself, we're called to resist, to be peacemakers. We're called to find that third way between returning violence with violence and doing absolutely nothing at all. When we actively confront the powers that be, even if we confront them nonviolently, there will be casualties. There will. Look at our own church. Karen Oliveto, Bishop Karen Oliveto, an out-partnered lesbian, was elected bishop in our Western jurisdiction. All of the Western states, California and Washington, Oregon. Reconciling churches all over the country, including ours, celebrated her election. But not everyone. Her consecration as bishop was challenged. It came before our high court last week. And they decided 6-3 that her consecration was in violation of our denomination's laws. That ruling leaves Bishop Oliveto and the conference that she serves in limbo. And the inability of our judicial council to have the courage to say that any law that prevents a gay person from serving as a pastor, that is no law at all. The fact that they weren't willing to say that has brought more pain and more suffering to our LGBTQ Methodist friends. Some of them, I'm sure, are wondering today, why am I in a United Methodist Church? And then maybe thank God that there are reconciling churches. Amen? Of course, Bishop Oliveto, the pastor that she is, raised all of those concerns before her election. So what would you say if you were Bishop Oliveto and you had been in the midst of that storm? What would you say? Well, she gave thanks to those who cared for her and her wife through the process. And then she said, remember these words from Ephesians 4, verse 2. Be completely humble and gentle. Be patient, bearing with one another in love. Let our love for each other, which is a good and holy thing, and the love of God, which never fails us, be our guide in these days. That's not how I would have responded. but I'm not a bishop, thank God. And Karen Olivetto most certainly is a bishop. Amen? Amen? So our hearts and our prayers go out with her, with her partner, and with that the Mountain Sky Conference that she's the Episcopal leader of. Bill Coffin, whose name you hear a lot in this church, longtime peace activist, pastor of Riverside Church, he tells the story of a couple of his friends who went on a fishing trip, and it was kind of an unusual fishing trip. I'm not sure I completely get it, but the friends were, I guess, wealthy, and they had a seaplane, and they were going out to fish in these lakes in northern Minnesota. And so they were actually flying over the lakes, and it was like these were these lakes where they're clear and you can see all the way to the bottom of the lake, right? And so they were flying in the seaplane over the lakes to see if there were fish in the lakes, right? And then they were going to stop in the lake where there was fish. Well, so they're flying over this one lake and they're like, oh my gosh, there's no fish in this lake. And there are two guys who are out in a fishing boat, okay? And they could see there are no fish in the entire lake. Well, they thought the only decent thing to do was to land the plane and shout over to these guys, no fish! There are no fish here, which they did. They had not anticipated the hostility of the fishermen in the boat. You see, they were out in the middle of the lake, out in the middle of northern Minnesota, and there was nothing else for them to do out there but just to go on fishing, which they did. Only now, they were twice as angry and they were twice as frustrated as before. Coffin said, you have a large segment of America who know there are no fish, who know there is no long-lasting military security in nuclear weapons and massive defense budgets, who know that the answer to crime is not more jails and more detention centers, who know that the solution to unemployment, poverty, immigration, you name it, is not our current way of doing business. But they go on thinking the same thoughts and doing the same things, only they're twice as angry and twice as frustrated as before. My friends, I want to tell you something. I want to be absolutely straight with you. I really believe that our country and our world has a great need for you. Yes, for you. For people of faith who understand the things that make for peace. Who understand that when you stand up to your denomination, and you say, you are wrong, and you welcome your LGBTQ friends, which you've been doing for the last 40 years, you're making a way for peace. Amen? Amen? When you stand up to the state, which is seeking to outlaw sanctuary cities, and you sign on with other churches onto the Austin Sanctuary Network without even fully comprehending what all might be involved in that adventure, you are making a way for peace. Amen? When you stand outside a mosque with banners of love and friendship, with smiles on your face and arms open for welcome, you are making a way for peace. Amen? Amen. In all the ways that you say no, no to prejudice, no to hate, no to violence, and yes to love, and yes to everything that we hold sacred, you are making a way for peace. So my friends, let us go out into this bright and beautiful and yes, lovely, cool day. Let us follow that path of peace that Jesus has set out for us. Let us seek not just to transform others, but to be transformed ourselves on that path of peace. And let us trust that all the darkness can never overcome the light. Thanks be to God. Amen.